Okay, so we're into the second half of our session on poetry, and we're going to look at a very different poet, Robert Frost, American poet Robert Frost, and we're going to look at his poem, The Road Not Taken, and I've put up page 12, thank you very much, and Jean, was telling me over coffee how when she wasn't able to get into Leo, she spent a lot of time looking up the stories about the writers, and she was deeply moved by what she read about Robert Frost. I was wondering if you'd like to tell us something, what you found there that moved you so much about Robert Frost, Jean.
Well, you know, I mean, it was really strange because when we had one of the assignments was to do an analysis, one of the first one I did on one of the poems. And somehow I chose The Road Not Taken because that's the one that caught my eyes. And when I wrote, you know, about it, you know, I actually was writing about, you know, a man's journey through life, you know,
and
disappointment, disillusions, regrets.
Yeah.
And then, and that was ages ago, like 3 weeks ago, two weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then I go into his biography, and this is why the poem was written. It was all about his life disappointment and delusion. And I went going, oh my God, Michael is going to think that I've copied that. Because that's what, you know, came out. And it's just that, you know, his life was just so full of disappointment, you know, in not only his private life, his children died. He lost four children. Every business venture that he tried to get into ended up as a failure, you know.
As a failure.
But he became, I think he was famous with, he had to say, he had to speak for John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was that he forgot his glasses and he couldn't see, so he recited one of his poems, but it made him so famous. And, you know, so that was his life, you know. And he still died delusion.
Delusional
about, you know, his life. So I thought, you know, what a great guy anyway.
Yeah, what a difficult life. So, and there's a picture of him there. And within Leo, there's links there. I've put up links for all these poets, so go and have a look there. It's certainly worth reading about their lives. But this poem has in it the line, the second last line, I took the one less travelled by. And some of you may have read the book called The Road Less Travelled, which, who's the author of that again? Scott Peck.
Scott Peck,
The Road Less Travelled. And I have read... Joey, did you read that book?
Yeah.
So what did that book tell you?
I'm searching my mind. It's a psychological book.
It is. Yep. It is. It's accepting who you are and not wishing necessarily to be different, but also allowing yourself to follow what your instincts tell you. Something like that. Something like, you know, you don't necessarily want to make millions of dollars or be rich and famous. But if you follow what your heart tells you is right for you in your life, then that is of value. Something along those lines. So we looked at Henry Lawson's Ballad of Sweeney, which is a story about a human being in all their difficulties and their complexities, describing their physical features, describing where they lived, what they did, and so on. Now, this poem by Robert Frost is quite different in the way that it uses language, in the way that it approaches its subject. What I've put up here is that an extended metaphor is used in the poem. An extended metaphor. We know what a metaphor is. A metaphor is when you compare one thing to another thing. Life is a road, is a metaphor. Life is a road. Life is a journey, is a metaphor. But in this poem, he takes this metaphor and he extends it over four stanzas. Let's read the poem and let's talk about it. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. Here's the yellow wood. Here's the divergence. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. And sorry I could not travel both and be one traveller. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Wanted wear means that it was grassy and not many people had been on there. Wanted wear means that it hadn't been worn down yet. There was still a lot of grass there. See, here you can see it wanted wear. It hasn't been walked on for a long time. Then took the other as just as fair and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though, as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same. So he's not really quite sure whether they are that different. And both paths that morning equally lay. In leaves no step had trodden black. So they both lay covered in leaves and no steps had trodden the leaves black yet. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood. This is the story that he imagines he'll be telling ages hence in years to come. And that we're listening to now, in fact. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference. So let's talk about what we think the difference might be. What does Robert Frost seem to give us a hint of here?
Defining moment.
Defining moment. So let's go with each of these ideas. Defining moment. And undiscovered, was it, Gary? Greg?
Well, he's going the other road, which has not been used much.
So what's valuable about that? That it hasn't been used much? Do we get any sense that he thinks that's the better one, or?
Well, he thinks there's other things to see other than the northern path.
Other things to see.
Could it be that it was the unusual, that even though nobody's seen
it. Yep, unusual.
Unusual or unique?
Unique. Now, I want to come back, Michael, to your first observation, defining moment. Why do you say defining moment? What does that mean?
Made all the difference.
Made all the difference. What sort of difference?
There's a decision involved.
Made all the difference.
That's how we ended the
decision. Fork in the road. See, fork in the road is a metaphor. What's fork in the road a metaphor for?
More than one path.
Yeah.
He's got to make a life choice.
Life choice. I like it.
Sometimes fork can have a negative meaning as well.
Yep.
Whether it's you either go right or left, but you've got that crossroads, that sort of choice.
I guess every choice has a consequence. Every action is, it believes you chose the right one.
Does the poem raise a question about whether he has taken the right choice?
or is happy with his choice.
I doubt this guy should ever come back, which means he'll keep going that path, but he doesn't want to come back.
But
he doesn't say it's better, but he says that it made all the difference, so, you know, he's saying it's worth it.
That's right, he says it's made all the difference, so...
It means that he has no regrets.
No regrets.
He couldn't change it if he wanted to, because way leads to way.
He couldn't change it, or he could.
He couldn't.
He couldn't.
Because it's just leading back to a different way anyway.
I wrote on my assignment last assignment, Resurrection, for this one.
You wrote that on this one, yep.
Yes, Resurrection.
Yep. So what do you mean by resurrection?
So, becoming alive again. I was dead. I was totally dead.
Yep.
And
I remember.
Yes, a lot of people knew.
Yep.
But the God put the soul inside me. I believe.
The God's restored the soul in you.
Yes, the God showed who is the I'm the killer. No one is the killer. No one can kill except me. The God showed.
So you feel the decision.
Your responsibility.
God has a decision. Only God has a decision.
Yes.
So how does that connect to this poem, Mong, in your understanding? Are you making a connection?
Yes, I think there's a bit close connection. Close connection to this topic of the road, the road not taken.
Because the road not taken is about a decision that has led to life for him.
Mm.
Okay, is that right?
Yes.
Are you saying there was an implicit decision in that experience? Even though God is part of life and death, and he recognized that, there's part of him that was there and had to make a decision. Oh shit, where did we go?
Scott, what's your thoughts about this poem?
Just a reflection on his life.
A reflection on his life. That's good. And what kind of reflection on his life? What's the essence of what he's come to? That's right, exactly. He's happy about the path that he took, but it's not as if he knew what the path was that he took. It isn't as if he knew that. In fact, there was a point in his life where there were two paths beckoning, and they both seemed to be much the same. There wasn't much difference. He thought that maybe this one was better because it wanted wear and was grassy and hadn't been used by so many people. That seemed to be the reason that he chose that. But really, when he looked at it, he wasn't quite sure, because they'd both been worn about the same, and both of them, the leaves had been not been trodden black, and he kept the first for another day. So it's not as if, I mean, we've said here that it was a defining moment, but it wasn't a very clear moment. It's as if he kind of took this one, maybe it was the line of least resistance, I don't know, it doesn't really tell us. But we do know at the end that he seems to be comfortable in saying that he took the road less travelled by, and that's made all the difference.
But it comes down to, if you're a gambler or a drinker or a drug addict or whatever, once you all had therapy or you took a different path, your mindset's different.
Yeah.
So you get on a different way.
Yeah.
And you're not cured, but you're better. So
yeah.
you go down a different path. You don't gamble, you don't drink,
Yeah.
Well, see, for me, I'd agree with that being an addict. But it's also about having faith that, you know, yeah, okay, you can take one path that everyone's been on, you know, and go through the motions on a daily basis. which, without even realizing, I kind of refer to this in my blog.
Yeah.
You know, I could take the path that everyone else travels, or I could go out on a limb, hope for the best, and yet have the hope that, you know, this is going to be the right one for me. You know, and not follow, and not get stuck in the in the groove of things and just going through the motions. You know,
living dead.
Basically being a zombie, like being a city slicker.
Yeah.
Going through the motions, going every day to one job and.
Well, you see, I doubt it if I ever come back.
That's right.
Oh, my God, it's useful. You know, anyone can use of this one when changing from one thing to another.
That's right.
So, because this has a lot of dimensional meaning.
That's right.
Yeah,
Mung, you're absolutely right. This has a lot of dimensional philosophical meaning. A lot of possibilities are here.
Yes.
In a way, the poem kind of opens itself to many interpretations. But I think that by the title itself, The Road Not Taken, and the concluding last two lines, I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference, seems to affirm that he has taken the right path in his life.
Okay.
Or he's happy with it, and he doesn't want to know about it.
That's another good point, yeah.
Yes, just shortly, when I die, and the people are saying he's not dying, he's coming back. Maybe.
Yes.
So, I was dying. I'm going to the road to another road.
Yes.
But he's not good. I didn't choose the road I'm going.
You didn't choose death.
Yes. See.
You chose life, and now you're here.
Yeah.
That's it. That's right. Derek.
All right. I think there's two specific statements that says you basically can't go back.
Yes.
Not one. So it's very clear about that.
Yes.
But the title itself is the road not it.
Yeah.
The road it took. So the poem's all about the road it took.
But then I don't know. I think, you know, especially in the last verse.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. I'm a bit confused about that because. And he says, I shall be in the midst with a sigh.
Yes.
A sigh usually doesn't represent joy. You know, it's
no.
You know, and that has made all the difference. So I'm still confused about the message. Has he made the right choice or not? You know, what is he trying to tell?
Well, you know, everybody's life has choices. In my own life, I can say that there was a time in my life where I wanted to be an artist, as a musician. And then I got a job as a teacher. And I thought to myself, do I want to be a teacher or do I want to be an artist? And I remember friends telling me, look, don't be an artist, you'll never make any money that way. And other people saying, take a secure job. And I didn't really know what was best. But now, having taken that, I still have some regret about not having the freedom of being an artist. But I also have the satisfaction of knowing that being a teacher was not so bad. In fact, it's got a lot of good things. So there's always, nothing is kind of clear cut. Yes, Michael.
Is that the first stanza or the first verse?
First stanza, either or.
Okay, yeah. There seems to be a lot of uncertainty.
Yes.
And
sorry I could not travel both.
Yeah.
And be one traveller. I wanted to do both.
I just read it now. And
yeah.
Ends with that he's content with the choice he made.
He's content now with the choice he made, but it doesn't completely annihilate the fact that the other way was attractive.
He will never know.
He will never know.
Yeah.
But he will.
He took the unconventional road.
That's right. But he will be telling this with a sigh as we're hearing it now. I'm Robert Frost. The road not taken. Two roads diverged in a wood and I took the one less travelled by. That has made all the difference.
We can never know what we don't take.
That's right, you can't. You can't. But you can hazard a guess. You can imagine. And I think Robert Frost is a human being like the rest of us. He's got a number of different possibilities. He's glad that he became a poet. that he became not a banker or a lawyer or somebody who was kind of channeled into some, you know, professional occupation where he wasn't able to express himself. He's expressed himself. So from that point of view, he's a happy man. Robert, you made the right decision. Lovely man. I'm glad.
He's lucky there wasn't a bear on that road.
He's lucky there wasn't a bear on that road. And there were bears in that part of the world. Yes, Harry.
It's slightly different thing in the sense that, I mean, I totally agree with your point about, you know, you live life, but, you know,
yeah.
And, you know, you choose one.
That's it.
But the point is, in that choice, you're committing to everything in that choice.
Exactly.
And you're also committing against the one you don't take.
That's right.
If you choose the life, married life, and you're choosing against, you know, adultery and fornication or whatever. I chose to come to Australia. I had a choice to go to Belgium or Australia.
Yeah.
I've never looked back.
Yeah.
And I never thought, gee, with what would it have been?
Yeah.
Or, you know, took the Belgian choice and really looked back.
Yeah.
I mean, my friends tell me it would have been more money and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm really interested because
yeah.
I have had such a grateful life in Australia.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
But what he's talking about here is not so much choosing one or the other. He's talking about, you know, there's a difference in the sign. And I don't, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with the point, but I don't think it's as simple as where you can't know what you didn't choose.
Yeah.
Of course you can.
Yeah.
Of course you know a lot about what you don't choose.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the reasons you don't choose.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right. Right.
You don't necessarily have to experience every thing in life
to know
what to do. It.
That's right.
I don't have to kill someone to decide that I don't want to be a murderer. You know?
We do have an imagination.
And we have a lot of, you know, teaching and background and commandments and laws that tell us what to do and what not to do if you want to live in society, you know? So it's not that cut and dry. I'm not saying it is, but it's clearer than vague. It's not completely vague.
No, that's right.
It's just a feeling, a form of our feelings. It's
excellent.
Clear.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, go, Jean.
I don't know, what I also see that in all this stanza, like each stanza represents a stage of human growth as a young man. You know,
each stanza represents a state of human growth, very nicely put, yes.
You know, this is how I look at it, okay? Doesn't mean it's right. But like, you know, as a young man, you know, like when you start
the
big wide world and you're young and full of all these things and you have all these choices. And then, you know, you become a middle-aged man. You know?
Yes.
You first you're a young man, then you're a man, then you're a middle-aged man, and then you're older man. This is how I look at
it. How you look at it,
Yeah,
good.
For me, the last stanza is reflecting over
the path he took.
The path he took, and in a way, like, you know, I can understand it as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's not so much regrets, but I'm wondering with some of my decisions in life, what if I had gone and done that instead of this? You know?
Yeah.
Especially like just over a month ago, you know, and I feel happy to discuss this.
Yeah.
And it is off topic. Just over a month ago I turned 25 and I turned 9 months clean.
Yeah.
Okay. The one thing that was going through my mind leading up to it was, what if I hadn't have come to Sydney to get recovery?
Yeah.
You know, I would have still had my daughter in my life.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't seen my daughter in 10 months.
Yeah.
You know, I would have still been there for her. I still would have been able to get a hug off her. I would have been able to see her smiling face.
Yeah.
But now
you're able to do, able to.
Now I'm more present in her life.
Yeah, right.
Without being present in her life.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. The paradox of that situation. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I can see like the path I took.
Yeah.
There is times where I can come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And go back down the road that I'm comfortable in.
Very good. Very nicely
but,
put.
You know, it's all about the
But
differences in situations.
That's
as
right.
Well, you know?
Very good. I'm glad you shared that with us. But I want to say also that the real difference between this poem and the Henry Lawson poem is that this poem kind of opens up those sorts of questions to us as we read it. It becomes almost like a means for kind of interrogating your own life. The road not taken, which path did I take? I mean, I suppose Sweeney could be taken that way.
So it's provoking thought.
It's provoking thought. But the emphasis in Sweeney is describing a character in all their detail, describing a life and the circumstances and telling us a story. At the end of it, we can also empathize with Lawson and say, well, maybe Sweeney should have been different. But the poem has got a different way of acting on us, it seems. Like that Frost is not telling us a story with that kind of embellished detail, but it's provoking thought in us, as Joey said at the start. It's existential in the way that it operates. Now, we're going to turn to the handout I gave you from As You Like It. And just briefly, we're going to come back to poetry again next week, but this is just to whet your appetite and to get you to see. Yeah, take one of those.
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot that one.
Yeah.
Yep,
take another one. Make another one. I had a copy of my own, which...
Just
my name. Okay, that's good. Lovely. That helps. Now, we're going to turn to page 78. This is the full text of Act 5. And Act 5 is the act that we're going to use in our performance. Not the whole of it, because our performance will probably be about 20 minutes duration. And we've got to work out who's going to be Touchstone and who's going to be Audrey and who's going to be page 1 and page 2 and so on.
How did those actors memorise all these?
How did they? Exactly. It's amazing.
That's what I was after. That was my question, basically.
Wow.
That
takes a lot of energy.
It does.
I'll tell you the secret.
Yeah, that's...
No, I'll tell you the secret. Take drugs because then that way you can read through it and you might not be able to remember if you've at least read it.
Yeah, but if you want to play, if you want to remember the lines for the rest of your life.
The question is, do I really want to remember these lines for the rest of my life? I mean, hell, I can't understand Shakespeare. I wasn't around in the 19th century or whenever he was born.
That's fine. I'm not telling you what to do.
What is it? Your lunch?
No,
you're
going to
have a fish finger.
No, I don't know fish finger. Okay, we're going to, if you're on page 78, are you on page 78? Now we're on page 78, and the reason I picked this page to begin with is because we've got Touchstone, who's the clown in the play, and the woman that he wants to marry, Audrey, and you'll notice that Touchstone and Audrey are both speaking in prose to each other. Can you see the way the line goes across the whole page? They're talking in prose. But then two pages come on. Now, what is a page? A page is a servant. And the two pages, they talk to Audrey. Now, remember, Touchstone is desperate to marry Audrey, but Audrey is not... Audrey is, well, she's a sort of a...
Happy-go-lucky.
That's right. This is the one couple who are a bit sort of questionable.
Happy-go-lucky or simple-minded.
Something like that. So I'm going to have Scott being Touchstone. Is that all right with you, Scott? And Jean is going to be Audrey. So you two are just for now. Things might change. Next week we might have Joey as Audrey. Doesn't matter. You'll feel part of it as you read it, and you are inviting Audrey to be happy about the fact that you're going to marry her tomorrow. So that's what you're going to do. Now we need two pages. One of the pages is going to be Thomas, first page, and the second page is going to be Derek.
Okay.
But all of us, when the song comes, we're all going to sing that song together, all of us in the class. Now, while we're doing this, we want to show how in Act 5, Scene 3, Shakespeare blends prose and poetry in the one scene. Now, this play, as you remember, it was amazingly rich in all sorts of different kinds of language, and we're going to get more and more close to understanding that as we work with this play. So let's try Act 5, Scene 3. Touchstone, off you go.
Tomorrow is a joyful day, Audrey. Tomorrow we will be married.
Now, Scott, it's a joyful day tomorrow. You're going to be married to her.
I can't do it, honestly. I'm better off not doing it, so I'm enthusiastic enough.
You probably could be.
Yeah, but I just can't.
You can't.
I'll happily swap.
You'll happily swap. Okay, will you be a page, first page for a Scott? Okay, go, Thomas. Now you've got to express real happiness at marrying Audrey. Go for it.
Tomorrow is the joyful day, Audrey. Tomorrow we will be married.
I do desire it with all my heart, and I hope it is no dishonest desire to be a woman of the world. Here come two of the banished Duke's pages.
Enter two pages. Scott, you're the first page.
Well met, honest gentleman.
Touchstone.
Be my troth. We'll meet.
Well met.
Sorry. Come, sit. And a song.
Second page.
We are for you. Sit it in the middle.
Shall we clamp into it roundly without hawking or spitting or saying we are holes, which are the only
prologues
to my bad voice.
Just before we go on, let's try and understand what the first page is saying there. Now,
sit in the middle.
Shall we clap into it roundly? Clap into it roundly. Shall we get into this song? Let's just launch into the song roundly without hawking or spitting, without or saying we are hoarse, which are only the prologues to a bad voice. So if you're hoarse and if you're coughing and spluttering, that's like giving an indication that we've got a bad voice. No, we're not going to do that. The second page says, go second page.
If faith.
Now, if faith meant in Shakespeare's time, it meant sort of agreement. It meant, yeah, sure. If faith.
Yeah.
Have faith.
And both in tune, like two gypsies on a horse.
Here we go, everybody. We're all pages now. It was a lover and his lass, with a hey and a ho, and a hey, nonny, no, that over the green corn field did pass in the springtime, the only pretty ring time, when birds do sing, hey, ding a ding ding, sweet lovers love the spring. And therefore take the present time with a hey and a ho and a hey, nonny, no. For love is crowned with the prime in the springtime, the only pretty ring time. When birds do sing, hey, ding a ding ding, sweet lovers love the spring. Between the acres of the rye, with a hey and a ho and a hey, nonny, no. These pretty countryfolks would lie in springtime, the only pretty ring time, when birds do sing, hey, ding a ding ding, sweet lovers love the spring. This carol they began that hour with a hey and a ho and a hey, nonny, no. How that a life was but a flower in springtime, the only pretty ring time. When birds do sing, hey, ding-a-ding-ding, sweet lovers love the spring. Right. Beautiful. Thank you, folks. What is Shakespeare... Why do you think Shakespeare inserted that song there? What atmosphere does the song create, do you think?
Fist happy, you know, like spring's the time of... or also new life.
Good.
The animals and the birds maybe, you know, probably...
Yeah, copulating, a word used in the play. So, yeah, and the music of the music of the song is in the words. Look at all the repetitions, all the sounds. Hey, ding a ding ding, when birds do sing, ring. All that rhyming inside the stanza. Spring, ring, sing, ding, spring. The poem is filled with rhythmic chiming. And even if we didn't sing it in the beautiful way that we just did, the poem kind of is filled with a sort of a life, the vitality of spring. And what about some of the ideas in it? It was a lover and his lass that over the green cornfield did pass. And therefore take the present time, for love is crowned with the prime. Between the acres of the rye, these pretty country folks would lie. This carol they began that hour, how that life was but a flower. What does that mean, how that life is but a flower?
Transitory, just
last
for a minute.
Just last for a minute.
Or a second.
So take it while you can. Enjoy it while you can. There is a famous Latin phrase called, I'm sure you've heard about this, carpe diem. Carpe diem. Seize the day. Seize the day. The Dead Poet Society. Dead Poet Society. And now what does Touchstone say about this song? Let's hear Touchstone's comment.
Truly, young gentlemen, though there was no great matter in the ditty, yet the note was very untunable.
Right. What does he mean, Touchstone?
That means you were out of tune.
That means you're out of tune.
There was great joy and happiness, and everyone gave it a go, but he's well and truly out of tune, and I went a little weak.
There's also no great matter.
No great profound thoughts in it. So Touchstone's a bit, he's not part of that mood at all, Touchstone.
In this season the trees have no leaves, I think.
That's it, in this part the trees had no leaves.
No leaves, they're all falling down.
That's right, they were all falling down. And over the page, on page 80, the first page again. Top of page 80. So Scott, this is your line. And you're a bit upset by Touchstone's comment on your singing.
The top 15.
You are deceived. You are deceived, sir. We kept time. We kept time. We lost. Not our time.
So we lost not our time. We kept in good time. Don't you tell us we were not singing well, that we were not tuned. So the first page is a little bit upset, touched down by your comment. So, and how do you rejoinder to that, Thomas Touchstone? Go.
My troth, yes. I count it, but time lost to hear such a foolish song. God be with you. And God mend your voices. Come, Audrey.
God mend your voices. A foolish song. He feels that he's lost his time by listening to a song like that. Do you think that Shakespeare is behind Touchstone's comment, or is Touchstone presented critically by Shakespeare through his reaction to that song? I wonder. Like, Shakespeare's put the song there, he's put the pages singing the song, the audience respond to that song, and then Touchstone makes those rather critical comments and says, there's not much in the song, you're singing out of tune, it was a foolish song, I've wasted my time listening to it. Whose side is Shakespeare on in that moment? Is he siding with the singers, or is he siding with Touchstone? Derek?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the proper name for the device is, but it's a device that I've used and recognized in other people's writing. Okay?
Yep.
Now, if you're going to say something, and you think, oh shit, these people might not accept it.
Yeah.
What do you do is you present it, and you say, well, that's actually not as good as it could be. It could be worked on, you know what I mean?
That's right.
But the moment you say that, you're kind of acknowledging the negative thought that the reader would have. So you've covered both sides.
Are you acknowledging the negative thought the reader would have? Would the reader have had a negative thought by hearing that song?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if Shakespeare wrote the song,
yeah,
and it's less than perfect,
yeah,
or it doesn't fit, you know, yeah, it is this play that's going so well and he puts a stupid song in the middle of it, you
yeah
know, called Springtime, but it has nothing to do with it. It's
well,
a lot
doesn't
of
it?
Involved.
I think it has
well,
a lot
I mean,
to do
I think it does as well,
yeah,
but
yeah
I'm talking about the issue
yeah
of being able to cover any negative comment that comes up.
Yeah.
So for the small amount of the audience that has a negative comment, or
yeah,
just a stupid song,
yeah,
which is, you know, executed by Touchstone.
That's
Touchstone
right.
Touchstone says those words.
Yes.
It's a stupid song, you know, it's a stupid song.
That's right.
So he covers that comment.
He covers that thought that the audience might
yes
have.
Yes, that some people would unconsciously
yeah
have
yeah
and some people
I thought it was a silly song.
Michael thought it was a silly song, so he'd make a good Touchstone, that's for sure. Now, it's interesting.
Shakespeare's covered Michael before he even started.
Shakespeare's covered Michael before he started. Well done. But Touchstone is, along with Jaques, are two characters who are sort of a bit out of the action. They are the fool. Touchstone is the fool or the clown. So there's a sense in which, you know, he's not really part of the main story. And Shakespeare likes to have characters like that in there who look critically at the action. Jaques in particular. And we'll get to know Jaques and Touchstone a bit more. We've run out of time, folks. It's 4 o'clock. And please take these with you and enjoy reading them. It's got footnotes at the bottom. Make yourself at home with these texts, because this is the text that we're going to use, parts of this, for our performance. And you might find that there are some characters in there that you'd really like to be. Well, we can choose characters in a couple of weeks' time and see who you'd like to perform as. And now I'm going to stay around. I'm going to be helping Jean. And who else was the person who couldn't get into Leo?
Me.
Michael. I'm going to help those in particular. But if you want to go to the computers and use those and maybe upload your assignment.
I was going to ask, when is it due?
It's due today.
By what time?
11 o'clock tonight.
11 o'clock tonight, yeah. Then I'll have a chance to proofread it with my tutor.
Yeah, you can. If we can get you on now.
No, I got my student number just
now. Oh, you got it. Have you tried to log in yet?
No, I haven't.
You should try before we go, because I can ring them and see if there's any problems.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, folks. Look forward to next week with you. It's been a great session.
Thank you.